Welcome to this episode of the PER On-Air Optometry Times podcast. Interventions for lowering intraocular pressure, or IOP, to the target range in patients with glaucoma include topical medications, laser therapy, and surgery. Typically, first-line topical treatment of glaucoma consists of prostaglandin analogs, which increase uveoscleral outflow. These drugs are well-tolerated, dosed once daily, and lower IOP by up to 33%. However, not all patients respond to these drugs. We asked Dr. Deborah Ristvedt about the challenges associated with the traditional approach to treating glaucoma.
As we all know, there can be many challenges when it comes to medical management in glaucoma. Are patients really compliant with their medication? If we look at some studies, 90% of patients don't take their drops correctly, and 50% of patients actually stop taking their medications after 6 months. And so that's always been something at the top of my mind when it comes to glaucoma management and care. We also know that over time, topical therapy can affect the ocular surface. Some patients have hyperemia, have fluctuating vision from dry eye, as well as have a hard time, whether they're arthritic or have a hard time tilting their neck back to get those drops in. Then you have economic burden. When we start medical management, we're not only thinking about how effectively it's working, but this is long-term medication that we're instructing the patients to take. And so what is the cost of these medications over time, and how does that affect how patients are using them? So as you can see, when we talk about ocular surface disease, the economic burden, quality of life and quality of vision, as well as compliance issues, we still have some questions about, are we doing the right approach when it comes to glaucoma care?
Adherence can be a challenge when using topical therapies to treat glaucoma. Barriers to adherence may include medication factors like adverse events, cost, and dosing schedules. Patient factors such as forgetfulness, poor knowledge of disease, and difficulty in administering the medication can also affect adherence. Topical treatments, especially those containing preservatives, can also initiate or worsen ocular surface disease. We asked Dr. Ristvedt about ways to improve adherence to topical glaucoma therapy and why it is important to limit the number of eye drops applied to the ocular surface.
When it comes to adherence in glaucoma therapy, I like to ask my patients how often they're missing their eye drops on a weekly basis, because that kind of tells us, are they forgetful? I like patients to actually show me how they're using medication, because you'll find that some patients feel like they're getting their eye drops in, but they're missing their eye altogether. And so I think it's in our hands a lot of times as doctors to be managing these patients and making sure they're doing okay with their drop therapy. It's like going to the dentist where you're going to floss the day before, but unless you're flossing every day, maybe it's not as effective. Same thing with topical medications. And so really asking our patients and getting down to the core of how they're doing is really important. Some patients are very compliant with their medications and they do extremely well, but it's really tackling those who are not doing their medications correctly or taking their medications correctly or who are struggling that we really need to focus on. And that's where we can have these real conversations now, because now we know that drug delivery is an option for our patients. We have intracameral drug delivery. We have drug eluting membranes that we can put as a stent in the eye that lasts for up to 3 years. So again, medications work, but when it comes to adherence and compliance with medications, it really comes down to getting down to the core of why they're struggling and being able to help them to achieve IOP lowering effects. When you look at how we treat glaucoma today, we're really looking at quality of life and vision quality. And 74% of patients who are being treated with glaucoma drops have ocular surface disease. What does ocular surface disease cause? It causes fluctuating vision. It causes hyperemia. It causes irritation and pain. And we know pain can be associated with quality of life as well as how patients are seeing. And so, as we're thinking about how we're treating our patients with glaucoma, I now see glaucoma medication as being used as bridge therapy. We now have SLT, we have minimally invasive glaucoma surgery, and minimally invasive bleb surgery. And so, what we're doing is we're allowing treatment and the burden off the patients by doing some of these procedures earlier in the disease course. And we're bridging patients now with topical medications. We know that topical medications work, but patients have to take them. And that's the elephant in the room, is that a lot of people struggle with taking medications, whether it comes to irritation or side effects, whether it comes to having a tough time getting them in because of arthritis or because of kyphosis. And so we have to be looking at these potential causes of limited therapy, and drops work. But again, can we do things better, or can we help with compliance in this manner when we talk about bridging therapy?
Topical therapies with novel mechanisms of action have emerged in recent years. The Rho kinase inhibitor Notarcidil was approved in 2017 for patients with open-angle glaucoma or ocular hypertension. By inhibiting the Rho-A-ROCK pathway and thereby actin cytoskeleton contractility, Notarcidil relaxes the trabecular meshwork, increases trabecular outflow, and lowers intraocular pressure. Notarcidil also lowers episcleral venous pressure, reduces aqueous production, and may have potential neuroprotective effects. Dr. Ristvedt outlined the results of clinical trials showing the efficacy and safety of Notarcidil in the management of patients with glaucoma.
Notarcidil is a ROCK inhibitor. And like we mentioned in talking about new mechanisms of action, the conventional outflow pathway is where we see the most resistance when it comes to increasing IOP. We know that patients actually have more disease state of the trabecular meshwork over time with glaucoma. And so how do we relax the trabecular meshwork and think of it more as an active process instead of a passive process when it comes to the pumping mechanism of the trabecular meshwork? That's what ROCK inhibition does, is it decreases the actin and myosin contraction. And so it allows more fluid to flow through into Schlemm's canal. What we also see is that adhesions are broken with this medication in the trabecular meshwork, and episcleral venous pressure is actually lowered with this medication. And this is the first time we've actually seen a medication work on the episcleral venous pathway, which we know limits the amount of IOP reduction that we can get. And so when we talk about Notarcidil, we look at the pivotal trials, which showed its non-inferiority to timolol. And whether it was combined with latanoprost or whether it was combined with combination therapy, we found that Notarcidil lowers IOP an additional 4.5 millimeters of mercury. And so it's really an effective medication to be able to really get more of an effective IOP lowering effect when it comes to bridging or adding medications. The side effects of Notarcidil are hyperemia and corneal verticillata. And so we see that, but it doesn't really affect patients like dry eye hyperemia would do, or the corneal verticillata. That's just more of a finding that we see, but it's not visually effective.
Because patients may need to be on multiple topical therapies, combination therapies are available to help reduce the number of drops and the preservative load and potentially improve adherence. Use of a Notarcidil latanoprost once daily fixed dose combination product was compared with latanoprost monotherapy in the phase 3 Mercury 1 and Mercury 2 trials. These studies showed that combination therapy significantly reduced intraocular pressure, and 31% of patients in the combination arm achieved at least a 40% reduction in IOP from baseline, compared with 9% in the monotherapy arm, a statistically significant difference. The most frequently reported adverse event was conjunctival hyperemia. Dr. Ristvedt reviewed reshaping medical therapy for glaucoma using methods such as fixed-dose combination therapy, preservative-free drops, medications with new mechanisms of action, and compounded medications.
Because of these challenges in topical medication therapy when it comes to glaucoma, we now are seeing some reshaping taking place in terms of how we're using medications and what types of medications are available to us. Combination therapy has worked very, very well for individuals that are on multiple medications. By combining medications, they're only allotted to take one medication or one eye drop instead of multiple bottle use. We also have preservative-free eye drops. We know that ocular surface disease in patients with glaucoma is extremely high. And so how can we limit the toxicity or the BAK that patients are exposed to in some of these drops, thus preventing more ocular surface disease? We're also seeing new mechanism of action medications come on the market. And that's what's so exciting is as we think about the conventional outflow of glaucoma, we know that the trabecular meshwork is not working as appropriately as it should. And so with some of these new mechanism of actions like nitric oxide being released to relax the trabecular meshwork, as well as ROCK inhibitors that release the actin myosin contraction and decrease episcleral outflow, this really is involving the conventional outflow pathway that, you know, in the past we haven't had options for. And so we're finding that whether it's combination therapy, preservative-free medication, new mechanisms of actions attacking that conventional outflow, or combining all these medications together through compounded therapy, patients hopefully are able to stick with their medications a lot more easy than in the past.
A number of innovations have occurred in glaucoma treatment. In addition to medications with novel mechanisms of action, advances have been made in laser therapy, surgical interventions, and sustained-release drug delivery devices. Dr. Inderpal Singh and Dr. Melissa Tawa outlined recent innovations in the surgical management of glaucoma.
I think we're very lucky right now to have all the new technologies and this proliferation of technology that we've seen in glaucoma. And it's from the kind of pharmaceutical side to the surgical side to the laser side. And I think what we're seeing now is this kind of balance between kind of safety and efficacy. And now we're finding that we have a number of different ways that we can address IOP at the same time and maintain high quality of life and high safety as well. And so from a pharmaceutical side, we have new molecules that allow us to address the pathology directly. We have molecules like nitric oxide and metarsidil that affect the actual outflow system directly, the trabecular meshwork itself and opening up those pores, relaxing the smooth muscle walls, relaxing the adhesions that we sometimes see in that area to allow fluid to flow through the conventional pathway, which I think is wonderful, right? That can help us early on, as well as even after doing other type of MIGS procedures. But I think we also have benefits of laser. We have new technology in the laser section. We have SLT that's been around for many years. The light trial was very, I think, crucial to give us another large data set that showed us that first line SLT, laser trabeculoplasty, is not only a good viable option as a first line treatment over topical pharmaceuticals, but actually might be a better option because we find that over 6 years, we have less people who progress to needing incisional glaucoma surgery, less people needing cataract surgery, and despite the same level of IOP, less visual field progression. And we also found that there's cost savings to the healthcare system as well. So I think SLT now has become a resurgence, I think, more than anything else. And there's also new technologies that have just gotten approved in the United States, already been approved in Europe, something called a Belkin laser, a direct SLT. Direct SLT is basically another way of performing SLT without having to use a goniaprism. So we deliver the energy externally through the limbus that allows us, again, to absorb the energy into the trabecular meshwork and still get the benefits of improving natural outflow facility, but yet not having to worry about a goniaprism or getting a good view as well. So some doctors who aren't comfortable with gonioscopic view during the procedure, I think would feel more comfortable now with this direct SLT as well. We also have other lasers in the laser section, and micropulse and other lasers that allow us to decrease the inflow and help outflow. So I think there's another option for a lot of patients before we do surgical interventions as well. And then within the drug delivery pharmaceutical pathway, we have ways to deliver medications now without having to deal with topical compliance-related issues. We all understand that ocular surface disease is an issue from all the pharmaceutical preservatives and the molecules themselves that can cause meibomian gland dysfunction, other goblet cell loss, and the benzalkonium chloride preservatives in the drops can also cause trabecular meshwork fibrosis, cause fibrosis of the episcleral venous system, and cause goblet cell loss in the conjunctiva. So if we have to do, let's say, a subconjunctival surgery over time, having chronic use of benzalkonium chloride containing drops for years can cause scarring of that tissue and cause more likelihood of failure of those subconjunctival surgeries. So if we can get people off of topical medications, not have to deal with the compliance-related issues, people forgetting, having issues with cost, again, the side effects, the hyperemia, all those things that we do know affect our patient's ability to stay on topical drops, if we can deliver those medications that we know work in a way that does not have to allow patients to have compliance issues, it's a benefit. And so now we have two different products that are available. One is a bimatoprost drug delivery platform. We also have a travoprost drug delivery oil that is inserted through a surgical technique that releases medicine now for up to 3 years if we look at the phase 2 data. So there's ways to deliver prostaglandin analogs that we trust in ways that allow us to decrease the compliance with our issues for patients and take control back to us. So we don't have to worry, are the patients taking medications? Are they tolerating the medications? Are they affording it? Are they getting refills, et cetera, as well? And then we have the MIGS platform, the MIGS world, one of my biggest passions as well. The minimally invasive glaucoma surgery world has just seen incredible proliferation over the last, not just decade, but even the last 5 years as well. We have devices that are stenting that can bypass trabecular meshwork, like the iStent and the iStent Infinite, which is 3 stents now that we can place as a standalone, not just at the time of cataract surgery, but also as a standalone. So you have a patient who already had SLT on a couple of medications, has a hard time taking medications. We know compliance is an issue. Well, we can go in the operating room now and place 3 stents, hopefully to get them off that 1 or 2 meds or reduce the medication or reduce the IOP without having to add more medications as well. So now having a standalone indication for a stent, I think is very valuable. We also have, of course, the hydras during cataract surgery as well. And then we also have canal dilating procedures. We have a number of different products in the viscodilating procedures or canaloplasty that can help open up the conventional pathway without having to remove TM or place a foreign body, but really flush the entire outflow system out from TM to canal to the distal collector channels. We also have a number of different products that can also cut the TM or remove TM as well. And there's a number of different products, hard to mention all of them at this time, but I think there's a number of new products in that marketplace. So doctors can find 1 or 2 products that they feel comfortable with their hands, in their hands as well as their top of population of patients, to either viscodilate or remove or cut the trabecular meshwork, goniotomy type of procedures as well. And then we also have subconjunctival procedures like XENs and other stents that we can utilize to bypass the trabecular meshwork into the subconjunctival space, let the fluid leave the eye, but do it in a kind of a safer way, more predictable way than a traditional trabeculectomy or a glaucoma tube surgery as well. So I think from my perspective, the innovation in glaucoma is truly affected me on a day-to-day level now, because now I can tell a patient, look, I can try this right now for you, which I think is going to be the best way to maintain high safety and high quality life, but also try to get those pressures down. But it may not work. But that's okay. We have other options. I may try different technologies, different techniques over the course of your lifespan to, again, maintain the high quality of life, as well as protect you from losing vision from glaucoma. So having these options at our disposal and understanding how they can all fit together has been truly revolutionary in our practice and truly an innovation.
So I think glaucoma treatment has really changed in the last few years. We have a lot of new therapies and new options that we didn't have before that are starting to change the way that we manage patients with glaucoma. The first one and kind of the oldest of the bunch that I'm going to be talking about would be our new mechanism of action that we see in Etarsidil, which is a Rho kinase inhibitor. And so with this one medication, we actually get 3 mechanisms of action. So we have an increase in trabecular meshwork outflow. We also have a decrease in aqueous production. So we're getting both sides of the, you know, increased outflow, but also decreased production. And then the third mechanism for Etarsidil would be decreasing episcleral venous plexus pressure, which I think in my glaucoma practice has really, you know, changed the game. And it allows us this new mechanism that we haven't seen in previous medications that I found particularly helpful for patients with normal tension glaucoma, patients that you have a really hard time lowering their eye pressures because they are already low to begin with. And there's the potential that we can lower their pressures even more with a medication and not necessarily needing to resort to surgeries. So you combine that with latanoprost. So now you've got 4 mechanisms of action in one medication that's dosed once a day. So I think this is a really nice way to target IOP from multiple angles in just one drop. We also, which is really exciting, on the horizon have new drug delivery systems, so including the Bimatoprost biocompatible, biodegradable intracameral implant that was FDA approved in March of 2020. And then quite recently, we have the Travoprost biocompatible implant from December of 2023. So these two new sustained drug delivery devices in the prostaglandin category that we can hopefully get patients off of or reduce their need for topical medications, which is really exciting. And I'm excited to see how the data evolves over time on the safety, efficacy, kind of how we can use these drug delivery devices in our clinical practice. And then lastly, kind of on the horizon, new things that we're looking forward to would be just increase in the number of sustained drug delivery options. So moving away from just the two prostaglandins that we have. Also drug-eluting contact lenses are in the works, as well as IOL drug delivery systems. So you can see the trend here is moving away from the need for topical medications and more sustained drug delivery that the patient doesn't need to put in drops every single day.
The introduction of minimally invasive glaucoma surgeries, or MIGS, has provided a less invasive option for lowering IOP that can potentially postpone the need for traditional surgery and decrease the need for topical medications. MIGS has a lower risk of serious intraoperative and post-surgical complications, such as corneal endothelial cell damage and bleb-related complications, and can be combined with cataract surgery. We asked Drs. Singh and Tawa when a patient with glaucoma should be recommended to have MIGS.
So I think that's kind of varies from your clinical practice and you know what you have available to you. But for me, the things that I think about are patients who are not meeting their IOP goals with their current therapy, whether they have already had things like SLT or if they're just on topical medications alone. And then the other big part of it that I think about is patients' quality of life. So even if they may be reaching their IOP goals with their current therapy, if it's significantly impacting their quality of life, either by they're having a really hard time getting their drops in, they're having to have somebody at home that helps put the drops in every day, which is being a big burden on their caregiver, or cost is a big one. I have a lot of patients who complain about the cost of having multiple medications along with all the other systemic medications they might be taking. So balancing the quality of life side of things, even if they are having good IOP control, as well as those patients who you think that need further IOP reduction to help control their disease progression. I think those are the patients where we start to have that conversation about MIGS, and I refer them to my local glaucoma specialist for a consultation and their opinion on what would ultimately be best for the patient.
This idea of when do we offer MIGS and what are the perfect type of patients for minimally invasive glaucoma surgery is a tough question because there's no right or wrong answer. A lot of it depends on the surgeon's comfort level of the procedure, their confidence in the outcomes of the procedures that they offer for the MIGS platforms, but also depends on the patient's willingness or desire to get off of medications. Because I think a lot of our decisions to perform minimally invasive glaucoma surgery is not just someone's progressing and they need to have something more done. That's an obvious person. Someone's progressing on 2 or 3 meds, they need something more done. Perfect solution for a MIGS procedure, especially if it's more mild to moderate, especially. But there's a lot of those patients who are, let's say, quote unquote, controlled in terms of their IOP, or maybe their fields haven't progressed rapidly, or their OCT shows the ganglion cells or the nerves, RNFLs, don't look significantly worse. But the patient comes in saying, "Doc, I can't afford my medications." Let's say they're having tolerability issues, or their compliance or their pressures may be going up and down. Even though they haven't fully progressed, that's a patient who's not quite controlled because of compliance-related issues. The likelihood of them taking that drug regimen, that course long-term, is relatively low. So that's the kind of patient I find MIGS has been very valuable, and where it's up to us to recognize the risk of poor compliance. So to the answer of who's the best candidate for MIGS, I think anybody you think that where drops are not working for them, they can't tolerate them, there's some issue with compliance, or someone who's progressing despite being on medications. And then that tells us, okay, what's my definition of success? What am I trying to achieve? Well, if the patient whose quote unquote target pressures are okay, but my goal is to get them off the medications, then I'm okay with the pressure being the same after MIGS, but if I can get them off of 1 or 2 medications, that is success. So our definition of success for some of our MIGS procedure patients is get them off the medications, keep the pressure the same, or even at 1 or 2 points higher, I'm okay. Example, patients on 3 medications, pressure 16. mild glaucoma. They send up combination therapy as well as a PG at nighttime. But they're having compliance issues, they're complaining of costs, their eyes are red, their eyes are dry, whatever it might be. So you as a surgeon feel like, okay, we got to get them off the medications. They've already had an SLT, let's say. Great candidate to consider doing a MIGS procedure. But the goal may not be, I want to get the pressure down lower. The goal may be, hey, look, their pressure may be 17 or even 18 after surgery, but they're off one or two or even three medications. That is success. Conversely, there might be someone who, let's say, has a pressure of, let's say, 18 on three medications or on one medication, let's say, already SLT, but it's still progressing. You don't want to add that second or third bottle, or they're already on three bottles. You may say, look, my goal is to get the pressure down because you're still getting worse despite being on those drops and despite having a pressure of, let's say, 18. I want to get you down to the middle teens, if not lower. Let's see if we can offer this minimally invasive way to help get the pressures down. You might still need to be on drops, but at least we can avoid a more traditional, more invasive surgery. Let's try to get the pressure down a little bit more with this safer surgery. And you might still be on drops, but we'll see how you do with the drops and we go from there. If we have to do that more invasive surgery, we can, or I don't say invasive, but if we have to do more traditional surgery, we can do that as well. So I think the idea is knowing what your goals are and what type of patient is helps you understand and who would benefit from MIGS.
Thank you for joining us for this PER On Air Optometry Times podcast.